the kombucha section is kind of long. I actually feel like we'll have a fair amount to say about that. Just like between the three of us, we've all had run-ins with that demon known as kombucha. Hello, and welcome to Brought to the Table. Today with us, we have Ian Walker, myself, Carter, and Caitlin Phillips here. Today, we are missing Diana and Scott. They are... Where are they at, guys?
Virginia and Boston, I can only assume.
All right, I was making a joke. I was trying to, like, you know, do a little...
They're finding Kevin.
Okay.
They're finding Kevin.
They're finding Kevin. No, we found Kevin last week.
They're finding a better Kevin.
No, we went to look for Kevin. Results are still unclear.
No, I opened... He was outside. I accidentally locked him out of the window.
Yeah. And you didn't
That was our resolution to the Kevin. Yeah. So anyways, Diana and Scott are being held captive by Kevin's associates. We didn't know this when we hired him, but Kevin is a fugitive from the Pigeon Mafia. Yeah, and so now they're being held as collateral. Appendages or digits have been sent to us yet, but you know, we kind of expect that, I guess. So this has been fun. We'll move on now.
This was a good bit.
This is a good bit. Listen, I'm trying my damnedest. So this show is a show that is about a group of friends. Normally, well, actually, I can't even say normally anymore. It's like we've been doing three for quite a bit now.
It's about whoever shows up.
Yeah, it's just a group of friends come together in various groups of various sizes and talk about what amounts to cool shit. Well, it's not always cool shit. Sometimes it's just like interesting shit. But anyways, today we have no freeloader. Yay! Woo! We are all...
Joke's on you.
We are all in this together in this Wildcat Nation. We are going to be talking about a tasty treat known as tea. Well, let me give you a little Foley work here.
No.
Gross. Tea.
Sounds like you're just slurping it.
I did just slurp it. Yeah, that's how you get all the aromas and flavors. It works for wine.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it's like wine. Too.
Yep. So yeah, anyways, we're talking about tea, all varieties of it, anywhere from like, you know, your regular black tea, green tea, to like boba tea, chai, to like your southern sweet tea. Like there's so many types of tea, and we're going to talk about a lot of really cool ones today. Well, I think they're cool. I think you guys probably think they're cool too. But by no means are we going to be able to talk about like all of it. Like I'm sure there's entire podcasts dedicated to just digging into tea and figuring out like the culture and the flavors and blah blah blah. So we're just gonna do what we think is fun and cool. So yeah, Ian, would you start us off talking about like the history behind tea and whatnot?
Sure. So as some people have said before in other things, tea is very, very old. Actually, I feel like we might have mentioned that in our mead episode way, way back, that, like, tea might have been one of the first drinks that people made.
We very easily, like, yeah, that sounds right. Like something we would say.
Sure.
But yeah, so tea has been around roughly about since 1700 to 1200 BC. It was, you know, found first in China, and it was used as a medicinal drink. The original one was Camellia sinensis. It's an evergreen plant native to Asia. Like Carter said, that, you know, it has since, you know, became a popular drink of spiced teas, green teas, black teas. You know, you have all sorts of different teas, and all different teas have different flavors. Essentially, it's a big group, and we're only going to be able to talk about a few of them, because depending on how you define tea is what tea really means.
That's beautiful, Ian.
Tea is
fucking gorgeous.
It's tea. It's great. But yeah, so like your process for tea is kind of the same no matter what type it is. Like there are a few variations here and there depending on like what the actual type of tea you're going for is, which, you know, Carter and Caitlin will jump into later on. But your basic principles are just, hey, I've got hot water. I've got some leaves. I'm going to put them in together and then, like, drink that.
I heard that as I've got some leads. Like, let's go get those pictures of Spider-Man. Nope. Leaves. Also, all journalists aren't trying to get Spider-Man.
Yeah, they are. Oh, that's
I mean, that's right. Yeah, kind of they yeah. are.
I wouldn't call us journalists, but if we were journalists, I would want pictures of Spider-Man on my desk by tomorrow morning.
Why would you want Spider-Man on your
pictures
desk?
Pictures of that's Spider-Man.
A horribly uncomfortable place for Spider-Man to be.
Pick him up, put him up there. Just pop him right up there. Okay, let's move on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about preparing tea, Ian?
I mean, not really. It's just, again, like, that's the basic overview of brewing tea, is that you boil some water, you get it just under boiling, you put in whatever your either loose leaf or your tea bags or however you are making your tea, and you let it steep. Different sort of tea brands or types require different steeping times. Don't know what that sound was. But yeah, so different types of tea brands are going to require different sorts of times or temperatures. And another important thing is going to be like overbrewing. It's something that I have done multiple times.
Something I did today. Heyo.
Yeah, something that Carter literally just did.
Love those bitter tannins.
Essentially, with overbrewing, what happens is you leave the tea leaves or tea bag or whatever you are brewing in for too long, and it just makes it really kind of bitter. And this is because, like, the production of tannins caused from, like, the heat releasing them from the tea itself. So make sure you take your tea bags out, kids.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, like, on top of, you know, the just preparing it, there's a lot of, like, stuff you can do afterwards to the tea. I mean, I personally am a huge fan of tea with honey. Like, almost all teas that I make, I think, are improved by honey.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, there are some teas, like, I think Earl Grey tastes better with white sugar instead of honey. I just like the taste better. And then a lot of teas will go better with milk or without milk. Some, you know, we're going to talk about some iced teas later. So there's a lot of different varieties of tea with your preparation. But like Ian said, you know, hot water, leaves, you get your hot leaf juice, and you take out the leaves, then it's just the juice. Just slurp it up.
The juice.
So, Caitlin, would you tell us, you're a science, right?
I've done a science or two in my time.
You've done a science. Could you tell us about some of the science behind tea, how they do the damn thing?
How the tea does.
Making it? Yeah.
So, have you had tea before? Yes. Have you had green tea? Yes. I don't know why I'm asking you two these questions. I know the answer to these. There's a couple of different types of tea. Let's talk about them. There's several different types of tea, according to internet. There's six common most types of tea, going from black tea, oolong tea, white tea, yellow tea, green tea, and something called post-fermented tea that I will get into later, if only for a second. We might not have much time for it. Let's see. So tea is first plucked, obviously. You can't just leave it on the bush and then try and brew it. That wouldn't work at all. So
dunk your whole damn bush in that in the water.
Just get a bush.
I'm gonna go to like the nearest like hot spring and just like an entire bush of like tea leaves in it just to see what happens.
Yeah. I think that's what hydroponics is.
Maybe.
I kind of doubt that. Just a little bit.
It's something where you still do need to do picking by hand sometimes, but machine picking, you can get away with it sometimes. So they will then start to wilt, as leaves do when you pluck them. This is good. You know, need these leaves to be dry because you want to be able to use them later. They'll either be put in the sun or in a cool, breezy room or something like that. This increases the availability of freed caffeine, changes the tastes of the tea, promotes breakdown of leaf proteins, etc. It's an important step in tea. Next is disruption, or leaf maceration. Maceration is also like the technical term for chewing things, so it just means like, let's just go to town on this tea.
Wait, like mash it up?
Yeah, let's just hit this tea.
Gotcha.
No, by shaking and tossing in traditionally a bamboo tray, or, you know, tumbling in a basket or something like that. Sometimes there's machinery to knead it, roll it, tear it, just further damage to the tea leaves that promotes and quickens the oxidation process, turning these leaves into actual tea. Then the tea kind of changes, depending on what kind of tea that you want to have. Because if it's a white tea, then those leaves are going to be picked much earlier, and they aren't going to go through as many steps. Because after they are disrupted, the next step is oxidation or fermentation, if you want to be technical about it. So black teas...
Aren't those two separate steps?
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
Same tea. Same tea. Same step. Oxidation, fermentation. For teas that require oxidation, you leave them alone and they turn darker and darker. So that's how you get, you know, from white tea into black tea. Oh, yeah. What I was saying earlier before I interrupted myself was white teas are like younger leaves, but that's not it. Or that's not the entire thing, you know. Let's see. Black teas get 100% oxidized, and in various oolong teas, it's anywhere from like 10 to 70% oxidation. It just changes the tannins, the qualities of the tea, whatever you're trying to capture. You know, sometimes if you do it wrong, it can get too grassy, but like sometimes your tea is supposed to be grassy. I don't know. Anyway, the next step is fixation, or traditionally Kilgreen, which is another wonderful term. Thank you, tea. Which is just done to say, okay, you've oxidized enough now, so stop. So you heat it up a little bit. Either traditionally, you put them in a wok. Woks are so useful. Or steam them. But now you can just kind of bake them sometimes. In some white teas, you also dry them at this step. So I mentioned yellow teas earlier, and then this next step only applies to yellow teas, and it's called yellowing. So after you go Kilgreen, you lightly heat them, and these previously green leaves turn into yellow leaves. So yellow tea is just kind of strange. Then you roll or shape them if desired, dry them to finish the tea for sale, and then aging slash curing, which is only for certain special teas. Like, for example, oolong will get smoked, essentially, more or less. Anyway, some teas will get a secondary aging step after they have dried. So oolong is often smoked. Pu'er is a special type of tea that is called post-fermented. So you, like, after it's gone through this whole thing and it's fermented once and it's dried, you go through and you ferment it down again. Or you just store them with flavorants. I believe that's something that affects jasmine tea. But again, this is only for some teas. Anyway, so that's the far more technical process of tea production than you probably wanted. But I just think it's kind of cool, all the different chemical reactions that we take advantage of to make that good leaf water.
Yeah, dude, I fucking love it. Part of the reason that I wanted to do this is because, like, I knew nothing about tea production before we started this. And, like, I did a little research into tea production, not as much as you did, but I did a little bit before we started this. And, like, it seemed to me like there was just this one path that, like, you know, you have your basic tea that, like, you essentially just, like, branch that path. And I guess that makes sense for, like, a consumable product that's evolved over hundreds and thousands of years. You know, like, because you've got, like, the basic process from like picking to oxidizing to like the Kilgreen, and then essentially like that's
just
about
such
it.
A good word.
That's such a good word. But like you've got that, which will give you your like your white and green and black teas.
Yeah, and your then, colors, like, you and then later on teas. Your flavors. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and you add like you can add. God, what's the word? What do they add to Earl Grey? Bergamot, I don't know how to say that word. That flavor, you know, they added that one in later. Yeah. Or like Lapsang Souchong is a Chinese smoked tea, and that, oh my god, it's so good. But it's like it's a like straight up smoky flavor. It's so good. And like there's all these different variations on the production process that produce these really interesting flavors that like just you know, it's evolved over literally thousands of years, and I love it.
It's very good.
Yeah. So let's, like, you guys want to start talking about like straight up types of tea and, like, you know, different things that we've kind of experienced through our tea journeys. All three of us are, like, I'm not going to say tea heads because that sounds weird. Like, big fans of tea. Like, when we went to college, like, it was rare that I would go visit Ian's apartment and he wouldn't have just, like, a pot of English breakfast tap. Yeah, right. Like, that's just like standard for you. And, you know, I think we all identified with that scene in Scott Pilgrim where she's literally going through, like, list of 23 teams.
It's only gotten worse with, like, the people that I live with now. One of them actually has, like, tea sent to him each month. And so, like, everything.
Oh, my,
like,
God.
Oh, I need a tea box like that. I want to expand my tea palette.
We've probably got easily $100 and some worth of tea in a bag sitting in our kitchen right now. And that's not counting all of the other tea that we have. Like, we easily have, like, way too much tea, but, like, it's amazing.
Yeah. But anyways, let's start digging into a couple of types of tea, and I'm gonna go ahead and start if that's cool with you guys. I'm gonna start with chai, which you know, like, we're all three familiar with. If you're not familiar with chai, and it's not called chai tea, which I will get back to in a minute.
Tea.
Yep. Chai is a spiced tea. Is a spiced black tea, so it does have some caffeine in it. In fact, it's on the upper end of caffeine amounts when it comes to tea. For scale, a standard cup of, you know, drip black coffee will have like 160-ish milligrams of tea in it, whereas a cup of black tea will have around 40 to 45 milligrams of caffeine in it. So it's roughly one quarter of the coffee for a cup of black tea to drink. And as you go from black to green, it gets lower. And then from green to white, it gets lower. And actually, herbal teas don't have any caffeine. Anyways, back to chai. So chai is a spiced black tea. And actually, in the country where it originated, in India, it is actually called masala chai, which means a mixed spice tea. And so the spices that go into this, effectively what it is just, you know, a tea that you make that you don't just take your black tea. You add in things like cardamom, cloves, peppercorn, actually, cinnamon, a lot of, you know, these really warm spices that, like, I actually associate with winter a lot of the times, you know, nutmeg, things like that. And then you'll brew your tea with those spices. Like I said earlier, chai is not called chai tea because chai in Hindi is just the word for tea. So saying chai tea is just like useless. It's like saying
non-bread.
It's literally non-bread. Just saying tea.
It is. It's precisely that.
Non-bread,
yeah.
Bread.
Yeah. So one of the things I spent some time in India a year and a half ago. And one of the things that I really enjoyed there was that chai was everywhere. I mean, it's just like a cultural staple. You know, you get up in the morning, you go to work, and you grab a cup of chai along the way. You're at work, you need to pick me up, you and your friends, you go outside, you grab a cup of chai. You're on the way home, why not stop for a cup of chai? It's just everywhere, and there's vendors all over the place. Like, I remember I was on a bus on the way from one small city in India to another one, like out in, like, literally the middle of the jungle, and we pull over on the side of the road, and, like, guess what's there? It's chai.
A person
selling us chai. Yeah, it was just this really cool little stand, and I loved it. One interesting thing about chai, at least to me, is that like Ian was describing earlier, when you prepare tea, you take your water and you heat it to boiling or almost boiling, and then you add your tea, and then you let it steep, and then you take it out, and then you'll add your additives afterwards, whether it be milk or honey or sugar or whatever you want to add. In chai, the like traditional way to do it is you will add your water and then your milk, and you'll heat those to a point where it's warm enough to make your tea, and then you add your tea bag or your tea flavoring or what have you. I think that's really interesting. I don't know what that does to the tea other than I think it just, like, gives it a richer, creamier flavor, probably. Yeah, I think that's really cool. The real reason that I wanted to bring this up was that cultural thing, just like that chai is so important. I don't know if I call it important. It's just like a big thing in India, you know, like we think of get up in the morning, grab a cup of coffee, you know, that's the way it is in India, but with chai. So,
I mean, granted, yeah, that's generally my morning routine is wake up in the morning, make a pot of tea, drink said pot of tea, make a second pot of tea, take that to work with me.
There you go.
On the way to work.
You'd fit in well. Yeah, that's all I have to say about chai. I like it a lot. I want to make sure we talked about it a little bit.
Let's see. We'll get to pu'er.
Yeah.
Help me out.
I think.
Pu'er.
I can't help but chuckle every time somebody mentioned. Says pu'er, because all I can think is pu'er.
Yeah, yeah, I get that's it. Fair. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not the episode title. I won't have it.
I mean...
We just simply cannot.
We've got to at least be... We've got to have a bottom line. A humor bottom line.
Yeah, no, we're below standards. Come on, guys.
Damn.
Anyway, so this is tea. That's the post-fermented tea that I mentioned earlier, where it goes through the whole big process, gets dried, and then you ferment it again. It's named after... Or no, actually, other way around. There's a town that is named after this tea. Yeah, I thought it was going to be this tea is named after town. No, it's other way.
So wait, what was the town originally called?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, did they change the name of the town after they made is the named tea? After.
Or did they build the town?
Did they build the town around the tea? Like,
Let's see. The name Pu'er dates back to 1729, but was changed to Simao after the Communist Revolution, so that's fun. But then in 2007, we went back to Pu'er.
All right. Gotta bring it back to the roots.
Gotta bring it back.
It just went down the drains, I guess.
Let's see. It's also called red tea.
Interesting.
And it... Yeah, right. It's just... let's see. How have do you I ever describe had it? It? I have. It's kind of strange. Prior to this secondary curing... These tea leaves are normally very bitter and harsh, but they will become sweeter and mellower through the extra fermentation step that they get, which is kind of cool. Yeah, it affects the smell and mellows the taste. It reduces astringency and bitterness.
It's interesting to me that it's called red tea because in my mind, even though it's an herbal tea, rooibos tea is normally what I think of when somebody says red tea, yeah. You know?
I think that's actually way more common. I'm just, you know, glancing over the notes that I took on Pu'er and I wrote down that it's sometimes called red tea, you're right. But yeah, like I said, it's just a fermented tea. I have had it. It's different. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, give me some.
It has like a richer mouthfeel almost. Like it feels like more.
A Richard mouthfeel. And interesting. Love Richard. Love him.
Love Richard.
What a dick.
I love to. Nope. Don't love to do that. it has just more of a mouthfeel than tea does. And yeah, it's definitely mellower. Sometimes it also tastes kind of smoky. Oh shit, here's a fun thing. It can be aged up to 50 years in some cases without diminishing in quality.
Wait, is that aged up to 50 years or stored up to 50 years? I guess, I guess, because like aging bourbon is just like, we've still got it.
It's still here.
Roll for bourbon. Yep, it's here.
Yep, we still fucking got it. Nice.
Anyway, so there's a weird tea that I've had a couple of times.
I like it. Let's do a longer one. You guys want to talk about...
I can do kombucha later.
I was going to talk about mate first.
Yeah, do that first, because I don't like it when it's one person's voice forever.
Yeah. Let's talk about mate. You guys had mate? I think you have, Caitlin.
Yeah, I love mate.
Yeah. Ian, have you had mate?
Yeah, I actually had some this morning that I brewed up.
Nice. Okay, so mate, for listeners at home who have not had it, is an herbal tea. It's technically not tea because it's not brewed with the tea plant. Like black tea, green tea, white tea, you know, all of those are all brewed with the same type of plant. The one that Ian was talking about earlier, what was it called?
Camellia sinensis.
Yeah, camellia something.
Yeah. Good old so camellia. That, Good old Camellia. Our good old Camellia plant is not involved in mate, and that's actually because, well, it's not because, but mate is not popular in, like, Asia because you don't grow it there, and you don't grow tea leaves in South America, where mate is from, because you can't grow it there. It's not native to there, so it's not heavily grown there.
It's not heavily grown.
It's not heavily growed there.
Carter's been having something other than tea to drink.
I truly have not. I promise.
It's those blueberries are getting to you.
I don't have any. I guess I did in my tea. Mate is brewed from a plant called the yerba mate plant, which is just, I think, literally translate to, like, the mate herb. So, yeah, pretty on-the-nose plant.
I mean, chai tea.
Oh, got him. And the mate plant is actually fairly high in caffeine after you actually make the mate. So drip coffee, like I said, had roughly 160 milligrams of caffeine per like 8 fluid ounce cup. Black tea has 40 to 45 milligrams of coffee, or 40 to 45 milligrams of caffeine per 8 fluid ounce cup. Mate has, like, pretty much right in the middle, a little closer to the black tea side, with about 85 milligrams of caffeine per 8 fluid ounces. So
yeah, I was gonna say, it's so closer, like, to like half of the drip coffee, but, like,
yeah. So it's like, I like to use mate because I don't drink coffee anymore. I used to drink a lot of coffee, but then, like, having too much caffeine was really hurting my sleep cycles and things. So I switched to just not drinking coffee and drinking tea when I needed to. And if I'm having a really rough day, mate is a really nice way to give it that extra kick and, you know, get me through the day, because I don't feel as guilty as drinking a whole cup of coffee. So like I said earlier, mate is extremely popular in South America, particularly in Argentina, where it's originated from. It is an infusion, not a tea. Like I said, it's an infusion, or a tisane.
Yeah.
Yep. The proper term is tisane. And it is mostly had in the southern parts of Argentina, because if you remember your geography classes, on the southern hemisphere, the further south you get, the colder it gets. And in South America, the more southern regions become rather mountainous as well. So, you know, even colder. So that's why it's primarily, you know, drunk in the south, because it's a tea and it's warm. It's also a communal drink. So the way that mate is prepared is in something called mate gourd, or just a mate. They use the word mate a lot, and it really, like, throws a wrench into me talking about it. I don't know if you can tell, because there's the yerba mate, the tea itself is called mate, and then the gourd is also called mate. So it's a real fun time to talk about. But it's a calabash gourd, generally, that's been seasoned with mate, that is used to drink it. And you'll put essentially like a pile of loose leaf mate, and you like do a special little shake such that the larger leaves, the larger stems and leaves are at the bottom of the gourd, and then the powdery stuff is at the top, so that as you're drinking it, and I'll tell you this in a second, why you want to put the heavy stuff at the bottom, but as you're drinking it, you don't drink up all that powder. Because traditionally mate, like I said, loose leaf tea in this gourd that is then filled with hot water. But before you fill it with hot water, you put in a straw, a very special straw that's normally made of metal or sometimes bamboo. That's called a bombilla. And it translates to, I think, like light bulb, you know, in today's terminology. But bombilla to me is just like the straw that you use to drink mate with. And it's just a long metal straw. Or bamboo that at the end has its own tea filter on it. So it's like, it's got holes in it, or maybe I've seen some that are like essentially like loosely coiled springs to stop the bigger stuff from going through. So it's a really cool little assembly there that like is a very unique way to drink tea. I think I still have the mate gourd that I used to have somewhere around here, but I think I lost my bombilla, so not great.
Well, I'm sure you have a light bulb somewhere.
Yeah, I'll just crush it up in there. I think that's how it works.
That's what the powder is actually, though.
Oh, it's glass shards. Exactly. Interesting.
That's what you have to fill. Like, you have to filter those out because of the asbestos.
Because of the asbestos.
Mm.
But anyways, so That's how like mate is prepared. You put the straw in there, and then you shake it in such a way such that the heavier stems and leaves go to the bottom and the powder goes to the top, so that you're filtering out the powder, like the powdery, you know, stuff, with the thicker, like you're using the tea to filter itself as you're drinking it. It's really cool. But because it's prepared in this way and you just like you keep adding water to it as you drink it, it's a really good like communal drink. And so you can you sit around a campfire and you'll drink some and you'll pour some more water in and you'll pass it over. And, you know, that sort of thing. It's a really cool communal drink that's been a part of South American culture and Argentine culture for a really long time. You may see in the United States a brand called Goyaki. I think I'm saying that right. I took like 7 years of Spanish. I should know how to say things, but you'll see
how to say things just wrong.
Damn, you got me good. You'll see the Goyaki brand of mate, and it's like a yellow bag with a, you know, like the South American outline on it with big G. They are the primary producer of mate in the United States, or the primary seller of mate, I suppose. They sell loose leaf mate. They sell mate in bags. They sell mate in cans, and then they'll add like fun little flavors onto it, like lemon. I've seen like strawberry and blue raspberry. But my favorite is their mint flavor. It's really good because mate has a grassy flavor almost. That sounds really bad, but I mean, like it is. It's like grassy, herbally flavor.
I actually have two cans of like their mate downstairs in the fridge. One is like the herbal, like mint one. And then they also had one that I saw the other day that I picked up that was like a berry. There's like berry revelry or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. The mint one is my favorite by far. I love the mint one.
So far, that's been mint is the so only good. Other one that I've had, like from the can ones. But I have like a mint. Like, oh god, was it? It's not just, oh no, it is just mint mate.
There's also like a
lemon ginseng mate that I've seen before that was interesting.
That sounds really good. Yeah, I've got two different mates in my pantry right now. I've got one that's a loose leaf that I got from a shop in Norfolk, Virginia, that like is this blend of like lime rind and mate and green tea. It's fucking wild. I want to have it, but it also is intimidating. And then I also have some of the tea bags that Goyaki makes, which are really nice, just to, you know, if you don't feel like doing the whole traditional, you know, put the lime in the coconut and shake it all up sort of thing. But they also produce these like energy shots, you know, like 5-hour energy size stuff. Don't do it. I promise you, you'll hate it. Don't do it. But yeah, that's mate. It's a really cool tea drink with a lot of cultural relevance in Argentina, and it's a really just fun thing to explore. If you're looking like to explore new teas and new tea culture as somebody who likes tea, I would recommend you look into mate. It's a really cool one.
All right, very cool. And I really appreciate you talking about that, since you're the person who knows mate best, and I think introduced all of us to it. But yeah, it was a real important part of my morning routine for a while.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about kombucha a little bit.
Actually, I'd like to hear Ian talk about sweet tea first, if he wants to do that. I just, you know, okay. Have a little, just, you know, a little short one for a little break. You know how it goes.
Cut me out, please. I didn't want to step on Ian. I just was thinking about kombucha.
We are all kombucha.
I mean, kombucha is also very good, though.
We'll get there. I wanted to have that last because I think that'll be a real fun one for all of us.
Okay, yeah, so sweet tea, very, very common southern drink. I think everybody here has definitely had it multiple times, and I'm sure we all have our own individual opinions about it. That being said, I don't mind it every now and then. The only complaint that I've heard a lot about it is way too much sugar, and it's more of a syrup. What it basically is just, like, imagine you take a gallon of black tea and you pour like 5 to 10 pounds of sugar into it while it's still hot. That's kind of what it is.
That might be an exaggeration on the volume of sugar, but
is it really though?
Certainly tastes like 5 to 10 pounds of sugar.
It is a lot of sugar. And like, whereas like most teas that I drink, at least, like I will use stuff like depending on if it's like a hot tea, sometimes a little bit of brown sugar in there is amazing because it adds
Ooh.
like a molasses taste is really good. But normally I use like honey or white or brown sugar in my tea, but not like excessive amounts. Or I just drink my tea plain because I'm too lazy to like take the extra few seconds to put sugar in it. And I've gotten used to it now. But yeah, so like essentially what you have with Southern sweet tea is just a bunch of black tea that has a lot of sugar in it. A lot of times you'll see it iced. I have tried drinking it warm before, and I do not recommend because the amount of sugar in there makes it very sticky. And
Oh,
combining that
God.
with it being warm is not a very, the kindest word I can think of is palatable experience. Ended up being very, very nice. So yeah, it's a very big like Southern thing, which, as actually currently all three of us living in Virginia, we're all Southern area in the place where sweet tea is well known.
Yeah, my grandmother, well, my mother's whole side of the family is from like deep South farmland, Virginia, and so like it's a very regular occurrence to walk into my grandmother's house, and just like there'll be a pitcher of sweet tea hanging out on the counter, you know, like it's just something that is always around, it's always there, you know, at least for me, whenever I was with that side of my family, because that's just like what it is. I don't know about you guys, but like my family, it's like it's Lipton sweet tea, like for tea bags or nothing, like that's it. You know, I don't even know if there are other options.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's black tea. Like, you can get any other brand of black tea.
Yeah, for sure, but like I don't know, it's just weird to me because
It's
like.
the aesthetic. Your family's going for the Lipton aesthetic.
I don't, is that just my family? I don't know.
Well, so we have modified our sweet tea
Oh
tradition,
no.
but we're also Texans and we break a lot of rules and we just do what we want and we don't eat lunch, apparently. Who knows? So we have. I don't remember the brand, but it's definitely not Lipton. Black tea, and then also cinnamon
Oh.
tea bags, and you brew those. And then we have evolved over the years from sweetening that with sugar to sweetening that with Splenda. And we essentially always have this iced cinnamon tea in the
Huh.
fridge, this big pitcher of it.
That sounds
So, like
good.
I said,
Interesting.
it's really good, but I'm aware that it's not traditional, Southern sweet tea, but it has its roots in that,
Yeah.
it's just turned into us doing what we want.
So
What you want?
that's like Caitlin's
What I
take
want.
on like sweet tea. Carter, what do you normally do with like your flavors of sweet tea? Do you normally just have it like plain sweet tea or like what is your family's thing?
So when I'm with my mother's like extended family, we normally just have like your straight up sweet tea. Occasionally we'll put mint in it. I love mint in my sweet tea. It's so good.
Mint is a good one.
Lemon is also like a really important staple in sweet tea, I think. Just adding lemon is really good. My mother, I think this is really funny. My mother grew up in like deep South and then moved into, you know, city life. She became a city slicker. And she likes making iced tea or like sweet tea with green tea instead of black tea. And it's very funny. My mother
Interesting.
has only ever,
Overbrews
yeah,
the
my
heck out
mother,
of it.
grew up making black tea, and black tea is really hard to overbrew. Like I oftentimes when I make like regular black tea, like Earl Grey, Irish breakfast, something like that, I'll just leave the tea bag in. I'll never take it out, you know? Like it's almost impossible to overbrew unless you're like actively boiling the tea bag. And so like my mother grew up, that's how she learned how to make tea, at least, you know, as far as I know. And so that's how she transferred into making green tea. Mom, if you're listening to this, I'm really sorry. I'm just absolutely blasting you right now. Just like just real sorry for that.
Oh, she'll get you
She
back.
will, I'm sure.
We love you very much, but the green tea
Yeah,
is overbrewed.
yeah, and so
Can't get
like, you
around
know,
it.
she's making this green sweet tea, but then overbrews it and so compensates by putting the exact amount of sugar you would put in a regular sweet tea into the green tea. And so it's like this really interesting green tea sweet tea combination.
And also mint
And
sometimes,
also
right?
mint, yeah, mint is generally a part of it, but I just think that's a really funny other little twist on sweet tea, like your family had, Caitlin, you know, that my family also
Oh, yeah.
does.
Just doing what you
Yeah.
want.
Is it kombucha time? Is it time for the Scooby?
Yeah, let's fuck it up. Let's do it.
Let's go, Scooby Snacks.
Give us that Scoobs.
I'll also stop saying want with a very bad southern accent. I keep doing it.
So you want to stop it?
Do it?
I'd like to stop.
Let's go. I can throw on my Spyfall voice again, my southern one.
Let's not go back to that.
All right.
It was so very tempting to edit out all of that.
Come on, Scoob. Let's go.
All right.
Come on this journey with me. So let's talk about kombucha. It is tangy, slightly carbonated, fermented tea. Like, it's pretty good once you are expecting it to be what it is. It is, unlike the post-fermented teas we talked about earlier, this is something where you will brew, normally green or black tea, and then you will go ahead and do some fermenting. So, unlike the post-fermented teas we talked about before, this is something where you will have brewed green or black tea, and then you go ahead and you add something to this, you know, brewed liquid and ferment it. You don't use yeast like you would with beers, but instead you use something called a SCOBY, which stands for a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast, which is fascinating in and of itself. Sometimes it's called the mother or the mushroom. It's not actually a fungus at any point in time. It's, you know, bacterias and yeast. No fungal. A lot of them, let's see, there's like layers and layers to the SCOBY, and it is essentially like a very thick biofilm that just keeps getting thicker. People say that the, you know, there's living bacteria in there, so that's probiotic, but we don't have a ton of health studies. We'll get into that later. But anyway, the SCOBY is so wild. It looks kind of like a blobfish, or the blobfish.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. You can dry it and use it as a leather-like textile to create seamless clothing.
No, I hate that.
How did you not know this, Carter?
Seamless clothing.
I hate this so much.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, awesome. Like, because you're literally, like, every time that you make a batch of kombucha, you almost always create what's called the mother, like Caitlin said, but it's essentially like you create a second SCOBY or SCOOBY that you can then use to make another batch.
Yeah, because you don't want it to overgrow.
Yeah, it's like sourdough.
So, like, you can kind of, like, continuously just grow these patches of SCOBY, and then, like, you can basically grow a suit.
I hate that. That's the part I hate.
I mean, you can also mess it up, so be very careful about your slimy boy.
There's a lot of things I've seen of, like, SCOBY wallets and stuff like that, because it's essentially, it's like a, like, animal-friendly leather. Mm. And so it's like, hey, anything that you use leather in, you can basically substitute this in. Also, you can eat it.
Gross. Anyway, so kombucha isn't actually an alcoholic beverage, but it does have trace amounts of alcohol because, you know, it was brewed with yeast. So if you're sensitive to alcohol, like I have an allergy or something, like, don't drink it. In terms of taste, it is kind of like tea and whatever was used to flavor it. Ginger is a real common flavorant, or I'm having trouble thinking of other ones, but, you know, berry, whatever you want. And also vinegar. Wait, I already said vinegar. Anyway, in terms of taste, it tastes kind of like the tea, any flavorants that were used, and vinegar. It's also, like I said, slightly carbonated, which adds to the experience in a pleasant way for me, but, you know, also makes it feel less like you're just straight up drinking vinegar. Yeah, like I said, like Ian said, it's actually pretty easy to make, but you really don't want to mess it up, because if you do, you could get severe kidney or liver toxicity, poisoning, you know, damage that you've done to yourself. And also, I just want to speak on it as a probiotic for a second, because human modern Americans, we already generally have too much yeast and acid in our diets. So drinking more acidic yeast and treating it like a health drink is a little bit wild. It also has been claimed to cure about a million things. And if something claims to be a cure-all, it's probably not going to cure anything. And if something claims to help you both lose some weight and regain your appetite, it's probably not going to do either of those. I would recommend you get probiotics from some other source, such as kefir or kimchi or sauerkraut or something like that. Or even pills, like, you know, probiotic supplements, so you know, like, what bacterial cultures you will be consuming. Oh, also, I want to talk about the name, because I didn't know this before, and I've had so much kombucha, so I didn't know how I didn't know what the name came from. Do you guys know?
No, I don't.
No.
All right. Well, we're not entirely positive, but the one that I want to talk about is the theory that it is a misapplied loanword from Japanese. So, in Japanese, kombucha is going to refer to a completely different beverage called kelp tea. So kombu, you know, Japanese is Japanese for an edible kelp. And then cha is tea. So it might be misused because the SCOBY, the mother, the biofilm kind of looks like kelp. And I think that's cool.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, I get it. I wonder if I hope that's true. That's really cool.
It's kind of kelp-esque.
Huh. Cool. So, when did I start drinking kombucha? I guess like early 2013. I guess I first got kombucha from the farmer's market in the town where I went to college, and that was
they had really good kombucha,
and it was like I like it a lot because it was like strong kombucha. Kombucha, if you're not familiar with the taste, oh God, let's try to put this fucking thing together.
Well, I did a second ago. Vinegar and flavor into it.
But like,
it's more pleasant than that. Yeah. So,
So like, it's tea based. You know, it's based off of a regular black green tea. You know, maybe sometimes you'll add some fruit flavors in there, ginger, like Caitlin was saying. I don't know. I think it's like. Like vinegary, I hate describing it as vinegary. Bad kombucha, 100% like vinegary.
Oh yeah, that's just vinegar.
This is vinegar. But I think good kombucha, like essentially, just takes those really nice tea flavors, like even the fruity flavors and the spice flavor that like ginger will add, and just like add a little twang on top of it, as well as give it like this really nice, really soft carbonation to it. Which actually, once we kind of get through this a little bit, I want to talk about the carbonation because that's a cool thing, how that works. It's great. But yeah, that's like what kombucha tastes like. But the first kombucha I had was a pretty strong kombucha, but not too strong, from this little farmer's market booth that I went to in our college town, and it was really good, and that's where I first got introduced to it. And then you know, I've had it a couple other places. Like there's a place here in the city I live in now that sells it like on tap. There's like one brand. God, do you guys know what that brand is called? The one really popular brand.
That one brand.
There's one like really popular national brand.
GT or?
Yeah. The GT kombucha is like the really popular one, and that's actually a rather weak kombucha, I think. But it's a really good jumping off point if you're curious into taking a venture into this really interesting category of tea, effectively. I don't know. I just want to kind of go through, I guess, my personal history on kombucha. I don't know what the point of this was.
Well, no, I mean, I like hearing about people's opinions with it. You know, I have talked about it's a blobfish. It's not going to cure your diseases, but it's a fun drink.
Yeah. I feel like we've talked about a lot of like scary negative things about kombucha. I really want to like raise it up a little bit because we, you know, like all three of us are big fans of kombucha. So I want to, you know, get us into that zone.
I like it. I just... a lot, like almost all of the advertising and, you know, the bottle blurbs and everything for kombucha is going to be talking about its health benefits. And I do think that we should take our guts and our microbiome much more seriously than we currently do. But just doing it with yeasty vinegar isn't the way to do it. And so if you want to drink kombucha as an enjoyable drink, that is great, and you should do that. And I do that probably once or twice a month, but it's not going to fix anything.
So Ian, tell me about your kombucha experiences, like whether it be your first, you know, first venture into kombucha or like making it or drinking, you know, whatever.
Geez, so like I honestly don't know when the last, oh, not when the last, but like when the first time I actually had kombucha was. Knowing how it probably went was my mother ended up getting a Scooby and was like, hey, I just made this, try it. Didn't like warn me at all of like, hey, it might be a little vinegary.
Oh, no.
Because like that's how kombucha goes. So I try it and it's just like an immediate punch to the face of vinegar taste. In all reality, it probably wasn't that bad, but it, because it was something I was like, I'm not expecting this at all. Yeah, it was a very strong vinegar taste. Also, it was not flavored with anything, so it was just plain black tea made into kombucha. No sugar, no anything, just vinegary black tea. Since then, she's ended up making like a whole bunch of different types of like different kombucha with different flavors and stuff like that. It's also much less vinegary. I've made a couple batches here and there. I, all joking aside, have trouble keeping like the Scooby alive just because like I forget to occasionally feed it. So, you know, that's a good way to kill it, is to not feed it. Or it's sometimes it just like it grows way too much and it takes up half the container and I'm like, how the hell did you do this? Like, either you're dead or you're exploding. So honestly, I think my favorite combination of anything with kombucha would probably be, I ended up making a blueberry kombucha one time.
Oh god, that sounds good.
And like ended up having that with a blueberry tea that I got from Eats here in Blacksburg and mixed that in, brewed it up, put the Scooby in it and left it for a few days, let it do its thing, and then ended up like boiling down blueberries in with a little bit of like sugar to make like a syrup to sweeten it with.
Wow, that sounds really
and
good.
It was one of the best things I've ever made, and like thinking on it, I should probably make some of that at some point. So I need to go get another Scooby.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I made a really healthy Scooby once through benign neglect. So
all right. That's an interesting way to do it.
Right? I don't know how to figure this out.
I'm much better with mead because it's you throw everything together and then put it in a closet for a couple months. Shake it up every now and then, but you leave it alone. The Scooby and like making kombucha, it actually requires a little bit more like diligence, and like I don't have that right now.
Yeah, that's understandable. When I've made kombucha a couple of times as well, and I sucked at it, just like flat out. I always found it really hard, even, you know, not even just like paying attention to it, but like the ingredients. It takes the sugar in the tea and it ferments it and it produces that vinegary, God, I hate saying vinegary because it's such a negative thing to like me in my mind, but like it produces that tangy flavor, right? But if you're not watching it or if you're not paying attention to how much sugar you have in it, you could throw in some really weird flavors. Cause like what I would always do is I would add too much sugar, right? So and I was trying to hit this like really good middle point where it would be pretty sweet, but then it'd be kind of sweet and have kind of a little bit of tanginess to it. But I'd never hit that middle ground. I would always either do like, I wouldn't brew it for long enough, and so it'd be like really sugary and then like not really be kombucha at all. Or I'd brew it for too long and it would just be drinking straight vinegar and it was terrible. So I think my problem was probably I just always added too much sugar and I should have back sweetened it a little bit.
That's what I was going to suggest. Like, that's what I've had to do with mine before, has been like, all right, I put the right amount for you to keep living and make kombucha. And all right, this is not sweet enough for me. So like after I pour it out into like another jar and get the Scooby out of it, it's like, all right, now I'm going to sweeten this on its
own. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's definitely what I did wrong now thinking about it. But I was talking about it earlier, how like kombucha is an effervescent drink and it's naturally effervescent, which is really interesting. And the reason for that is the coolest thing. So we've talked about it before on our meat episode where fermentation produces carbon dioxide, right? And so for mead, what you'll do is you'll have an airlock, which will allow the carbon dioxide to escape. Now, the SCOBY is, it grows horizontally. It floats on top of the kombucha normally, and mm-hmm. it will grow to the size of your container, like horizontally, and it'll fill the gap, okay? But it's still brewing and it's still fermenting. So what it's done is it's created this really soft seal under which it's brewing and it's creating this carbon dioxide. And while it does have enough pressure to release some of it does still dissolve into the tea. And so that's why kombucha is just a little bit effervescent, just a little carbonated, just because it naturally forms the seal over the container you're fermenting in. And that's what does it. It's the exact same mechanism by which you carbonate like a beer or a soda, but you're doing it like this thing just does it on its own. It's not even like, it's not even a thing. It's God, it's just so cool.
I did not know that. That's really
right?
cool.
Right?
And effervescent is a perfect word for it.
Yeah, it's like, it's not...
Much better than vinegary.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not like carbonated. It's not flat. It's effervescent. It's a very soft, bubbly, sparkly feeling. It's great. Okay, anybody else have anything to say about kombucha?
Don't pay too much for it. It's... Like Caitlin said, it's this big new trend, but like, just don't spend like over $5. Don't spend over $4 on like a bottle of kombucha. It's good and all, but like, I've seen it being way too expensive, especially at like some farmers markets and stuff like that, where they're like, hey, here's like an 8-ounce like bottle of it for like $10. Like, don't.
Also get it from a trustworthy source. Like if it's just some dude who brews it in his bathroom, Ian, sorry, I coughed while I was saying Ian.
In the kitchen is where I brew all of my stuff.
My bad. But anyways, if it's somebody, like that you don't trust, like I would drink Ian's stuff just because like I've seen him make it and stuff. But if it's somebody who brews it in his backyard, and you don't know who they are, don't drink it. Like this stuff could easily make you sick if you don't do it right. So just trust your sources.
I've never killed anybody with anything that I've like brewed.
Yeah, I doubt that.
That sounds like you like talking. That sounds like you did kill someone with something else. Like
don't the talk vague about way, this, Caitlin.
Yeah, come on, this gets put out on the internet. Yeah. All right. So that's it. I think that's all we've got on tea. Honestly, I think it was really good. I don't know about you guys. We got some really cool stuff out of it. If you don't follow us, I would really or follow us on social media. Never miss when we give you updates. We're on Tumblr and Facebook at Brought to the Table. We are on Twitter at To the Table Pod. You can find us on Gmail. Wow, that's not how that works.
You can find us on the Gmails.
You can shoot us an email at broughttothetable@gmail.com. Shoot us submissions. Shoot us your favorite teas. Shoot us, just like whatever you want to say. Like, I love hearing about different tea culture and whatever. So, like, if you know, say, about, like, I don't know, like Japanese tea ceremonies, tell me about it. I would love to know. You're probably listening to us on some sort of device or website. We aren't
look straight to their ears.
Straight to their ears.
The airwaves.
Oh, weird. But we aren't sending Kevin out right now because, like we said, he is in trouble with the pigeon mafia, so we cannot send him out for fear for his life. We'll figure out how to get Scott and Diana back at some point. I don't know. Maybe it'll just be like this ransom, like hostage trade. Like, next week we'll trade Caitlin for Scott and then we'll just, rotate it out. That seems reasonable, right? Nobody has to spend too long in the basement of that mafia boss.
Yeah, Kevin went too deep and to be punished for his mistakes.
From what I understand, though, like they get some pretty good meals there. Like just the other day, they had a bunch of like goat cheese and like really really good like the not the blue bunny but like what the fuck is it like the
bluebell
yeah
that was a Texas thing for me at least but
bluebell that's totally Texas
anyways so we're in trouble with the mafia or something. I don't know, we're crafting this lore too fast for me to keep up with. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming to our table. We will catch you next time. Hawaiian pizza, goodbye.
Hawaiian pizza is good. My grandparents have a wine cooler fridge that is exclusively for cans of Sprite Zero.
Oh, man, that's not the soda I was hoping it was going to be.
What were you hoping? What soda would make this better?
Big Red.
Oh, yeah, that totally would have made this better.
I thought I was 100% expecting Big Red.
No.
Fucking love Big Red, dude. It's so good. I had a red cream soda the other day. I really wanted it to be big. It was close, but it was just like, wasn't big enough. It was plenty red, but like it didn't have that hashtag Texas vibe.
No. Did I tell you already? When I was little, I thought it was alcoholic. So like, I wouldn't try and drink it.
And people Why did were you like, think that?
It's not, Caitlin, it's not alcohol. I don't know. Because they made a big deal about it and it was only available in Texas.
That's fair.
You know, that Texas exclusive alcohol.
That Texas, the sweet red Texas alcohol.